Friday afternoon, April the 3rd, 1992, at the home of Pee Wee King on Country Lane in Louisville, Kentucky.
The writer showed his film in color.
Oh, they did that intentionally so to make it look...
Well, see, we did our interviews in a hurry last week, and then of course Wednesday night, why they said shoot all them big stars, all the present stars that are on the rainbow lobby.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Before we start that, I want you to look at something.
Okay.
This is what
let me turn this on.
This is what the Country Music Foundation puts out a book, and then you can, they tell you where you can write and get it. And I talked to Ronnie Prophet, and I also talked to Kyle, the guy who puts the book out.
Oh, that's Smiley Burnett.
And he...
Country Music.
I said, I want to give that to the man that's interviewing me for the book and everything. He says, well, it's about time.
It's about time. Well, that's what I said, wasn't it?
But now I got a negative answer, too, from the guy who just put out a book on... Cliffy Stone used to work for Gene Autry to run the publishing companies, and he put out a book, and he says, King, he says, don't do like I did. He says, it's now in the hands of the distributors, and there ain't nobody buying it.
Well, because, you know, you can't make people buy anything, even no. Pancakes or hamburgers or books.
Advertising.
But it's marketing. But the good thing about doing a book is that once it's in print, it's indestructible. It's always going to be around. It's always going to be available to somebody. And I don't know where we'll try. Everything I've published so far, most of my books, have been by university presses. And they don't do a lot of promoting, but one good thing about university presses is that they get their books in important collections and libraries so that you know that once a book gets into the University of Michigan Library, University of California Library at Berkeley, University of Texas Library, Cambridge University Library, it's there forever, as long as there are books. So that anytime anybody wants to read about the subject or about the person, it's there, you know. So, and not all books get into good libraries, you see, not all of them. But I'm not gonna worry about that problem yet. We've got that to worry about when we get get to it.
I had my ears open for this because Ron said there's one company's name that distributes the books, and Randy Travis's book only sells for $8.95, 210 pages.
Is it paperback? Must be paperback.
I don't know.
It has to be.
It says in that book.
In the magazine?
Yeah. He's got the first book mentioned. No, towards the end of the page it tells you.
Towards the end?
Yeah, right there. Where it says books on top.
Oh.
They feature a black one and Randy and... There it is right there.
Yeah. Randy Travis, the king of the new country traditionalists. St. Martin's Press paperback, $8.95 paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... it says it's a sad... The reviewer says it's a sad reality that few books on country music sell especially well. Popular books on currently hot artists tend to do better than average, but many of them are uncritical treatments that satisfy only the artist's most rabid fans. That the first book-length treatment of the meteoric career of Randy Travis, born Trawick, how do you know that was his real name? Trawick, Certainly a currently hot artist, if there ever was one, was by Don Cusick, a respected writer and scholar, raises hopes that for once such a book might transcend the apparently genetic limitations of the genre.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I was saying, you know. We want to do a book that is going to be interesting. It's, people, your books are competing with television and movies and all kinds of recorded music. And
the racks of books that you see in the department stores, you wonder who buys them.
That's right. So a book has to be interesting. It has to be interesting. And that's what we're trying to do. Now, that's why I keep coming back to you and saying, now, do you remember anything else about a particular person or a particular event, so that a person who reads our book will get something that he can't get anywhere else, you know, but maybe he hasn't heard before, he hasn't read before. Tell me, Pee Wee, to start off today's talk, what you did last...
Running?
Yes, Ruddy. Mm-hmm. What you did last week. You went down to Nashville?
Went down to Nashville, and they put on a special television show, and now it has to be edited. It's going to run 2 hours. It was produced and directed by the Country Music Foundation, CEO of the Big Land, Bill Ivey, and then he imported a Hollywood, California director, and he knew his things to do. It wasn't as slipshod as people would think. A guy comes in here from California that doesn't know any of us, he's rather young. But then Bill Ivey, who is the president of Country Music Foundation, or the curator, he knows the people that he wants to feature, because he's right on top of it all the time. He gets calls from their management to bring a memorabilia in for a museum.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sometimes he don't take one because he don't have any room for it. Mm-hmm. Or else he said, I'll take it. And we have to sign an agreement that they carry it out to the warehouse until we find room for it, and it's stored, and there's a security. The security is great out there at the warehouse they got. It's a concrete building with only one door in it, and it's a metal door. And but people like Roy Acuff, they wouldn't give a no to, because his fiddle is worthwhile. He's got 2 or 3 of them that he puts in the museum that he's got, which is very, very loaded up with stuff, too.
Well, where's that?
Roy Acuff in Nashville, Tennessee, right by the Opryland.
He has his own museum. I've never been there.
Oh, yeah, he's got his own theater there, too. Right. They film a lot of television shows that are intimate type of things for a small act, mm-hmm. or a small band, or a small mm-hmm. star, or a new star.
Mm-hmm.
But the big auditorium, the big Opry Grand Ole Opry, is about 4,700 seats.
Mm-hmm. I've been
it's
there.
It's packed and jammed to the rafters.
Mm-hmm.
And the title of the show is Silver Anniversary of the Country Music Hall of Fame Members. And the oldest one that was there was Jimmy Davis, and he's 93 years old, the former governor.
Jimmy, I didn't even know he was still living.
Oh, yeah.
Where does he live?
He lives in New Orleans.
Jimmy
and
Davis.
He's doing a good job. He and his wife, Anna, travels with him all the time. And they do gospel things, too. They help out politically, doing a couple gospel numbers for the people down there.
Well, now, when did you meet him? Do you remember how long ago it's been?
Years and years ago. I'd say at least 40 years ago.
Uh-huh.
When he was governor, I met him down there, and we had good visits then, and since then we've been very close. Well, we write to each other every Christmas and send interchange notes and that.
What is his most famous song? You Are My Sunshine?
Yeah,
is that the one?
My Sunshine.
Yeah.
That's what he sang. He sang the first, that was the closing number of the show for our part, the Hall of Fame members.
Mm-hmm.
But they interspersed it with different, well, Kenny Rogers was the host.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barbara Mandrell joined them towards the end. She introduced the dancers and the band with Johnny Gimble.
Mm-hmm.
And they interchanged the hosts at different times. Once in a while, they would let one of the girls introduce another girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so proud because Kathy Mateo, who was a new star, and she come to me in the dressing room and she said, I want to tell you something. When they told me that I'm going to sing the Tennessee Waltz, I says, by gosh, I'll have my chance to get even with Mr. King. So on the stage, she said, before she sang the Tennessee Waltz, they gave her a few seconds to talk and introduce herself, and she said, I'm proud to be able to introduce Pee Wee King, and he is a co-writer of Tennessee Waltz with Red Stewart, his partner. But let me tell you something, when I first came to Nashville, I was a tour guide at the museum and the Hall of Fame. And there was that happy smile boy, man come in there, he was like a little boy. He walked up right to the desk and said, my name, no, he didn't say my, he said, what's your name, young lady? And he grinned all over the place and said, she said, Kathy Mateo. He says, good. He says, what are you doing, gonna be a singer? She said, I am a singer. And I says, is there anything you can want advice about touring people around? Because that's a tremendous job you got on your shoulder. And if you don't know what you're supposed to say about it, maybe some of them I can give you some help on. And he left, never saying what his name was.
The stranger, but she didn't know who it was?
No, I didn't say it to her. She
No, I know, but she didn't know who it was who was talking to her.
No, not
she didn't know. Okay, go ahead. I just
so then when she got through, she said, and I want to dedicate this to Pee Wee King, especially his charming wife in the audience. So
because that's who it was who was talking to her.
Oh,
yeah.
She got a big hand. She's a wonderful artist. And I was pleasantly surprised with a young lady that I've known all her life, practically. Mel Tillis's daughter, Pam Tillis. She's a newcomer. And they gave her a good spot on the television show because they put her in the middle of the audience. And she sang with the soundtrack was made already, and she sang a Patsy Cline song, Walking After Midnight, and
mm-hmm.
she belted it out. She proved herself last Wednesday night, I'll say that for her.
I didn't know that Mel Tillis had a daughter who was in the business. How long has she been performing, do you know?
I'd say about 7 or 8 years, ever since she was a youngster, yeah.
How old is she now?
I'd say 28, 29.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't stutter though, does she?
No. No, but then Kenny Rogers came out and he was saluting the Hall of Fame members. And he said, you know, he said, I wrote my first song by inspiration. Since I was recording other people's songs, and I thought to myself, why can't I write a song? So he said, the guys responsible for it are in here and are being paid respects today, and I want to pay my respects to Pee Wee King and Curly Putnam, and named the other three or four, I'm trying to remember who they were, but anyhow, I got a big kick out of them. And then I wondered about why a young lady in the aisle was getting so much attention. All these kids, high school age and younger, were gathering around this good-looking woman, and We found out later, in about an hour or so, when they had a little intermission and put the lights up, it was Michelle Lee from the series Knots Landing, and she's a good singer herself, and she bounced and rolled and rocked with all the type music, and then when the dancers came out there, she was really beside herself to close the show with Barbara Mandrell and all, and she watched him like a hawk, and I tell you, she enjoyed it. But her husband was a co-director on the show.
Now, who produced this show?
The Country Music Foundation.
The Foundation.
For CBS, I think it is, or possibly TNN, I don't know.
You don't know which of the two?
Not yet, no.
But has it...
It hasn't been sold, but I'm sure it'll be within the next couple of days. They're dickering on it now.
But they... So what you did was to, you all made tapes, and they're going to edit that into you said 2 hours?
2 hours.
And it's going to feature members of the Country Music Hall of Fame, like yourself.
Plus the top artists of the day today.
Of the day. Okay. Now, who were some of the...
Alan Jackson.
Okay, of artists of the day?
Clint Black. Randy Travis.
Now, you know, for some reason, I like him very much. I don't know why. What is there about him? He seems to be...
See, I played Hamilton, Canada. And he was there the night before, sponsored by the Shrine. And we come in the next day, and we were sponsored by the police and the sheriff's department of Canada. Mm-hmm. And there was a note for me in the envelope. And this man come backstage. He says, "Pee-wee," he said, "I got a note for you." And it was from Randy Travis. He says, "I want you to know I plugged your two shows tonight." And he said, "When you come down to Nashville next time, you can thank me if you want to."
Yeah, where was this, Pee Wee?
In Hamilton, Ontario.
Hamilton, Ontario. Yeah, I know where that is. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a nice fellow.
And then when I got to Nashville, I tried to call his office, and I couldn't get no answer from anybody. His secretary wouldn't tell me what. So I left the word. Mm-hmm. So I met his wife last night for the first time, Wednesday for the first time.
Randy Travis's wife?
Yeah, okay. Olivia, his manager.
His wife is his manager?
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was married.
She discovered
it. She did?
Yeah, she owned the nightclub in North Carolina, and that's how come he got into the business. Mm. Of course, he was a chief. He was a chief catfish fryer for Mr. John Hobbs at the Palace Restaurant. That's where he was working to get his break.
Is that right? Where was that?
Right behind the Grand Ole Opry.
So he went to Nashville to get his break, but he had to support himself by...
That's right, working as
frying catfish.
Catfish, and very good.
Very good.
Mr. Hobbs said he was a very good attraction, not only as a fish fryer, but he also went on stage with the boys in the band and sang. And that's where he got his break.
Oh, I see. And was this before he met his wife?
Oh, yeah, way before. Well, he met her, he worked for her in the club up there, and she was the one who brought him to Nashville.
Uh-huh. I see.
Because she said it happens in Nashville.
Yeah.
And if you can't make it there, you can't make it anywhere. Yeah.
Okay, so Randy Travis, who are some of the other younger ones that are featured on the...
Travis Tritt and... let's see... Vince Gill. Kathy Mateo. Peggy, the girl from Kentucky. Funny, I can't think of her name right now, but I'll have a list for
you. Okay, what do you think about these younger people that were on this program? Do they have talent?
They're doing a great job. They must be, otherwise they wouldn't be on the charts all the time. Garth Brooks wasn't there, and Reba McEntire wasn't there.
Were they supposed to be?
No.
Oh.
But Loretta Lynn was sick. She was under the weather, and she didn't come. Mm-hmm. And of course, Minnie Pearl couldn't come.
Yeah. You didn't have a chance to see her, did you?
No, I called her husband and told him that we were in town. And
how did he say she was?
She's just no changes at all.
Yeah. She's still in the wheelchair.
Still in the wheelchair, got a 24-hour nurse, and around the clock.
Doesn't
attention.
Sound good, does it?
No.
But now, Art, who were some of the other old-timers there besides you? Who did you say?
Kitty Wells.
Kitty Wells.
Hank Thompson. Bill Monroe, Grandpa Jones, Roy Eka, Governor Davis, Floyd Tillman, I love you so much, it hurts me. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to go around.
Was little Jimmy Dickens there?
Oh, yes, I forgot.
Jimmy Dickens, yeah.
Yeah, he said he's having a little trouble with his arthritis in his shoulder. He said that. He said, I just don't run around like I did before. I said, well, you're killing yourself on the road now.
What did he call you?
Dad. Band, yeah, because my band used to back him up.
Uh-huh.
See, when he didn't have a band, but now he carries a regular group all the time.
Did you have a chance to visit? Did you all socialize?
Oh, yeah. We did a 20-minute set, then we had about an hour to kill while some of the other people were on. And then we went out there for the finale, and we did that in about 30 minutes of our part with the interviews and the Black and White. Eddie Arnold didn't come, but he came in for the interview and a couple of days ago. Clippy Stone from Hollywood came in. Gene Autry was supposed to come, but Gene couldn't make it. And Roy Horton from New York, he came in. He's a Hall of Fame member. I'm trying to think who it is. And there was Chet Atkins.
Chet Atkins, yeah. Did you have a chance to see any of them, and did you go out to eat with any of them afterwards?
No, they had a cocktail party reception after the complete show was over. But see, we filmed for about 7.5 hours, so what happened was I was tired. We drove down to Nashville, and I got a room, and then I thought, well, Lydia could visit with her sister-in-law down there. Her brother's, he's deceased now, and Lydia and Margaret grew up together practically when she married Buddy, and Lydia was married to me. We lived next door to each other.
In Nashville.
In Nashville, uh-huh. Yeah. So she said she didn't have, it's too late to call Margaret now. She said, I wouldn't do it, so. We went on to bed, didn't even go to the reception or nothing. Because we were all together for seven hours.
Well, now, did you have an audience, a live audience?
Packed and jammed. They gave away 6 tickets per person. And they give your name and who your guests were. And that's the way it's going to be for Minnie Pearl coming up. May 6th, they're giving her a live party, but I don't think she'll be there. The president's coming, and I think the vice president, 2 presidents are supposed to be there. And they're going to have pretty close security, so if you get a package of 6 tickets, you got to, in return, mail their names and what door you come in. And your seats are already reserved.
And that's for the Minnie Pearl.
Yeah, for the Minnie Pearl tribute.
Tribute. And that will be at the Opry House?
Yeah.
Will that be broadcast live, or?
I don't know whether it's going to be just a radio show or whether it's a TV show. It's just in the embryo stage now.
Well, now, you mean the audience stayed there for 7 hours while you all were taping?
Oh, yeah. And they were just as loud as the first hour. They were a good group.
What time did it start?
It started at 5 o'clock, 5:30.
In the evening?
We were a little late, yeah. Then we went on till about 12:30.
Well, you must have been exhausted.
Oh, I was beat.
Do they have places where you can, dressing rooms or lounges?
They have food there. We ate in Roy Acuff's Theater. They put all the food out there, and if you wanted, you went outside to the door in the Roy Acuff's Theater. And they had refreshments there and coffee and tea and everything.
But the taping was all done
at the Opera House.
At the Opera House, auditorium, yeah. I've been there once, and I was in the very, very last row at the very top because we managed to get tickets at the last minute. And we were lucky.
I don't like to go up there. I get a nosebleed.
Well, you can. You get a little dizzy. I was.
Well, we first time when they started having the guests backstage, they always used to do an impromptu interview with the stars or star coming in. And they brought to bring us upstairs, way on the top floor, and then they would shoot the audience that was in the. All you see is the backs of the people in the stage. See, and they said, now when you get up on a stage, what are you going to do? And then they shoot the stage and the audience and then come back to the interview.
You play, of course, at the old Ryman Auditorium. What kind of facilities were the facilities like there?
They were Grand Ole Opry style, as people knew it from the beginning. It was an old auditorium built by the colonel, a Navy man. I forget what his name was. But anyhow, it was built after the Civil War, and or somewhere in their territory. The balcony started from the halfway mark and went all the way up, but there wasn't quite that many seats, and they didn't fix the leaks in the roof. The roof used to leak. And,
oh, really? While you were performing?
No, out in the audience.
Oh, but not on the stage?
No, not on the stage. And backstage was just a stage, and that's all. And the dressing room facilities were nothing, like two closets put together.
What did you had restrooms back there?
Well, yes, very, very, very bad too.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, they were outmoded. They weren't the facilities that you would expect today. And of course, we knew that, and we went along with everything. But it was the fact that you were in the Ryman Auditorium and working the Ryman Auditorium, and being on the Opry. When you left, you put your instrument in the case and went out the alley, parked in the back, walk up the alley, and you'd stop, you usually, and look back at it in case somebody that you knew was coming by, or somebody said they'd meet you back at the alley and they want to meet you and talk to you a while. And you'd make the remark. You turn around and say, well, I did the best I could, Lord. That's like being in church on Sunday. Yeah. Saturday night was church night on Sunday. Yeah. And Loretta Lynn's got the best joke of all on that part.
What's
she say? She come over to the boys' side of the dressing room, and she said, Roy, I want to see you. And Roy says, okay, I'll be out. He says, no, after the show. He said, well, where should I meet you? She says, in the alley.
In the alley.
That's right. That's where you met all the time.
Well, that's right. She played the old Ryman before they moved. Yeah, I'd forgotten that she was back there.
And, of course, most of the musicians, 90% of them go right to Tootsie's in the alley. It was right there.
Well, I was going to ask you about Tootsie's. Tell me what you...
Tootsie's.
What was Tootsie's?
That's a meeting place for the Opry boys, usually, or even some of the girls. They drink a beer once in a while and get refreshment. but it was also like a testimonial to support the Grand Ole Opry people, because they write their name on a wall. Pee Wee King sat here, and then they put Tennessee Waltz under it and all that.
Is Tootsie still there?
Yes, it's still there, but I'm afraid it's going to be torn down for the new Broadway. They're putting out a new Broadway look with outdoor restaurants, France style. Uh-huh. And a little cabarets. Mm-hmm. Some of the other buildings are going to be kept like they were. Restoration is going on right now, but I don't know the date that the Broadway project will be ended.
But it's still open to the public right now.
Yep.
What is it? Mainly a bar?
It was a tavern. It was a regular tavern. And it had room for two or three people to get up on stage and sing when they wanted.
Oh, they had a little
stage
there. Yep. Did you ever play there?
No, heck no. I didn't have time.
But a lot of people who were trying to break into the business,
they wanted to be heard, and they says, I can meet you at Tootsie's.
Uh-huh.
And Tootsie would let them go up there and play.
And perform. That is, if they couldn't get into the Opry to play, they'd play at Tootsie's
first.
That's
right.
But did any stars ever play at Tootsie's?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them. And a lot of stars, when they were hungry, you would get about $20 or $30 from Tootsie. She'd loan them the money and said, now you pay me back when you come back from the tour.
Really?
And they did.
Did you ever borrow any money from Tootsie's? Had to. But who were some of the ones that did, do you know?
Oh, there's some, the two brothers, the Bales brothers, I think, and a couple of acts that weren't quite as popular as the other ones.
Did you ever lend money to other stars?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you never know what happens, because a lot of time, one time I remember Crash Craddock was coming up to work a date with us up in northern Pennsylvania, and his bus broke down. And he said, I just brought enough money, I didn't think my bus was going to cause me this much trouble. And the guy said, I'd fix it, but I got to have cash. I won't take a check. And Crash was just starting out in the business then. And he had 6-7 boys with him, and they had to take his word for it. And the man drove him up to the building where we were playing, the auditorium. But then when the night was over, he waited for Crash to bring the cash to him. And the money that he got for playing the date, plus what I let him have, is how he got his bus back on the road.
Now he was playing. Was he a part of your group, or he was just playing on the same bill? Same bill with you.
Usually they put on three acts together.
Now where was this?
Oh, up in northern Pennsylvania. I can't remember the town. I think it was York, Pennsylvania, or Johnstown up in there.
Well, what about anybody else that you can remember that you helped out a little bit that needed it?
Well, right now it escapes.
Yeah. But you always pretty lucky. You didn't have to, it wasn't always hand-to-mouth with you as it was with some of the others.
No, because, see, my father-in-law was ahead of me on dates usually, and he was the guy that would hire the ticket seller and all that. So we'd know in advance how far to go and whether we had some. Sometimes we didn't make our guarantee. Mm-hmm. Business, if they get a snowstorm or what, when you go for a rain out, you know. Mm-hmm. But the Lord blessed me, I guess.
Tell me about Tootsie. Who was she?
Tootsie was a wife to a singer. I can't remember his name right offhand, but he was a very popular singer on a radio station in Nashville. Mm-hmm. WLAC, but he never got bigger than the go around the country and play big dates.
He worked at little high schools and festivals around Nashville. Mm-hmm.
And she was?
She was his wife.
His wife. And you know where she was from? Was she?
No, Tennessee, Nashville.
She was from Nashville?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
What was her last name? You know?
I'd have to look through my books.
Yeah, I just wondered. What kind of person was she? I mean, can you describe her?
Just an ordinary, looked like a housewife. Mm-hmm. And she acted like she was a big mother to all of them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'd cry on her shoulder and she'd listen to their troubles.
Mm-hmm. Is she dead now?
I think she's passed away about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing as the woman who lived across the street from me. She took in all the boarders, Carl Smith and all, when they came to town. She ran a boarding house for
them. What was her name?
Grandma. Mom Upchurch. Mom Upchurch.
Mom Upchurch.
Lived on Basketball Street, right across from me.
That was in Goodlettsville?
Yeah. No, in Nashville.
In Nashville.
Yeah.
Where did you live in Nashville? What street?
Basketball.
What?
Basketball, B-O-S-C-O-B-E-L.
Was that when you first moved to Nashville?
Yeah.
Basketball.
It's within walking distance of the Tabernacle, the Fatherland Street Tabernacle. See, we live right, the Tabernacle was about the 600 block and we were about the 800 block. So we went
to that street. I believe it anymore. And so Tootsie opened the tavern to, I guess, make a living, didn't she?
Oh yeah, she made a good living. She knew how to keep the place running and keep in good order. And as far as I know, that I can remember, I don't think they had one difficulty with anybody.
No, you have fights or anything? Never
no fights that? Or anything. Now, if there was fights, it had to be in the alley.
Oh. She'd say go out to the alley and settle your business. Yeah. Yeah. Well, did she serve food there?
Yes, the best sandwiches you ever had. Roast beef sandwiches and that.
That was a specialty, roast beef?
Yeah.
Did she sell barbecue, you know?
Well, barbecue was very popular too.
I was never in Tootsie's, but that's, you know, she's just a legend. And
see, then what happened to me when I had my hitching post up the road at the Goodlettsville Highway, mm-hmm. and the hitching post was about 6 miles from town. Some of the boys, they wouldn't stop at Tootsie just to come up to the hitching post, and Mr. Carnahan would fix them sandwiches and beer, and he'd put a whole tab on them until he got back. Some of them came back and paid regular, and others didn't, because they figured if they come out, go to Tootsie's, it'll take them 2-3 hours to get out of town. This way, right to Pee Wee King's hitching post, mm-hmm. they were just about 10 minutes from downtown.
Would Tootsie put food on the tab for people too?
Oh yeah, there were several guys. When they first started, a lot of boys down there didn't have, they lived from one day to the next.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the movies that I saw, that I took home and looked at.
Gold Mine in the Sky?
Yeah, let me see, I'm looking for what I have here. Gold Mine in the Sky. Now that was Gene Autry's movie. I didn't gather from you that you had made a movie with Gene Autry,
was the one he promised to use us in, the first big money maker for him on Broadway, the first time a big theater, the New York Broadway theaters were playing his picture.
Uh-huh.
Up until then, he was just a musical cowboy or singing cowboy.
Yeah, this was not his first movie, though.
Oh no,
but
the
he
first
had,
big one.
But it's for his first big one. And he had promised that he would use you and the Golden West Cowboys.
About five or six movies he did before that, we didn't get called. But then when he had Gold Mine in the Sky, it was such a big song that he said, I might as well get Pee-wee and the Golden West Cowboys here.
Well, I noticed on the credits,
it's J.L. Frank's
Golden West. It's J.L. Frank's Golden West Cowboys.
That's right. He organized it.
What now? What?
See, I went up to Milwaukee and brought those three people down. And in the meantime, when I was getting them ready to join the Golden West Cowboys, he was getting a couple of people down in Tennessee to work with him, too. He got a guitar player, Milton Estes from Oneida, Tennessee, Middlesboro, Kentucky, and then he got a, Abner Sims from Indiana,
mm-hmm.
from Corden, Indiana, played a fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
Called him the fastest fiddler in the world. He had a title.
How long was the group known as J.L. Frank's Golden West Cowboys? Or was it just for the movie?
Just for the movie.
Just for the movie.
Because we hadn't been organized long enough.
Yeah. So this was one of the first things that you did, I guess, as a band.
Yeah. That was it.
You you all are on the stagecoach in the movie.
You knew how that happened, didn't you? I told you.
To tell me again.
Well, the stagecoach was there waiting to take off and coming around the bend and bringing back the guests from the depot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were inside what do they call it? Not a wagon. A buggy, not a buggy either. Stagecoach.
Stagecoach, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said stagecoach.
Yeah, I said stagecoach. Yeah.
But when I could come to be in the setup, I had my rhinestone accordion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time he ever put the rhinestones in an accordion up in Milwaukee. When I bought the accordion, I was proud of it. It was the first $1,000 accordion.
Did you ask them to do that especially for you?
Well, no, the powers to be weren't there yet.
Uh-huh.
And Smiley Burnett says, I'll tell you what we'll do, kid. He says, we'll put you up there, we'll lift you up, and then we'll put your accordion there. Then we'll put straps for you down on the seat so you'll bounce around in that. But hang on for dear life and play that accordion, because right down the front of it in rhinestones you got Pee-wee.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that's good with me. So about that time, the director came by, Joe Knight, Harry Knight, and he come by, he says, Pee-wee, what are you doing up there? He said, you got to come down. I said, I can't, Mr. Knight, I'm strapped in. And of course, I couldn't explain how I was strapped in this way across the waist, then under my shoulders, and the accordion was strapped in with me. And he says, you're bound to fall off of that. Have you ever ridden on a stagecoach? I said, no, sir, but I'm willing to try. I said, I'm here to make a movie, and I want to be seen in the movie. And he said, well, go ahead, forget it. He said, but hang on for dear life. We don't want nothing to happen to you. So I did.
Yeah, you were way up high, weren't you?
I was with the driver.
Yeah.
Way with the driver, yeah. The two of us were up there by ourselves.
Yeah.
And this fella that was driving the horses, he said he'd be very careful. Joe Urigo, and he was the first double for Autry before George Montgomery came in to the picture at that time. So Joe Urigoyen, they rented the horses to the movie company. And he says, I grew up with horses, I'm still with horses, and I'll probably die with horses. But you be the first accordion player that ever rode next to me. In fact, I don't think we'd find another one. So, but most of the time they wouldn't let you take an accordion out. But not the one like that.
No.
Because they figured, them little button jobs, that wasn't for me. This was a piano accordion, modern, and the girls couldn't wear wristwatches or rings, and here I am with a rhinestone accordion.
There was so much glitter, I guess
it
would have affected the cameras, maybe.
Well, they didn't worry about that. It was too far-fetched that I'd have an accordion of that kind.
Yeah.
Because the Westerners never had an accordion But it was fun.
Well, now, did you all take the soundtrack separately?
Yeah, we did a soundtrack. and then we acted out for, after this, we did the soundtrack in the studio.
Uh-huh.
And we came out there, we had the accordion.
And then you had to kind of pretend that you were playing and
mimic.
And mimic it, yeah.
And lip sync.
Lip sync, yeah.
Yeah, lip sync too.
Okay, yeah, they got some good shots of you, I must say.
Oh, yeah, I made sure.
In both of them, you made sure?
Yeah, it's because Smiley said, and watch, when they try to move you around like that, you got to turn around, and the first thing you know, you're out of there shooting your head, and they got the face of the guy in front of you. So Smiley said, you be careful about that. But I think one of the funniest things that happened, beside the accordion situation, and to show you I was hip, I was there to make a movie, boy. I wouldn't have no for an answer. Gene Autry come in for a shot inside the tavern. And I was there with my white suit on. And he looked, he says, kid, he said, who told you to wear a white suit? I said, nobody, that's all I brought. I come from Nashville with this, that's what I wear on stage. He said, I know you wear it on stage, but I'm the only one who wears a white suit in pictures.
In my movie, anyway.
In my movie. And I said, oh my. And I said, well, what should I do? He said, go up to the prop wagon and get yourself a costume from them. I said, Mr. A, way up on the hill, I ain't gonna make it back in time to get it. I said, that prop wagon ain't the one gonna have nothing my size, blue jeans or nothing. He says, well, I'll tell you what, we'll figure this out. He says, we gotta have a piano man at the piano anyhow. So you might as well go sit back there and make believe you're playing. And the piano will play accompaniment to the scene that we got set. I said, thank you, sir. I went back there and I watched the angle and I saw where the girl, where Jean and what's her name, the leading lady, would come in and be by the bar. And I figured, well, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna just scoot around a little bit and make me wind up playing like this.
Got in there. You got in there, yes, yeah. You did. Yeah, I recognize you right off.
And then when Gene, when he looked at me to start the band for the dance and everything else, I made him come up close. I says, with all the noise that's going on here, Gene, I can't hear. He says, if you holler Pee-wee at me, he says, I'll have your attention. Then you say, start the music. That's what he did. Pee-wee, start the music.
Did you all rehearse these scenes very much?
Oh, a lot of it, yeah. Some of the things that the stars do, they cover it. So,
right? No, but I mean, did you all, for these scenes in Gold Mine in the Sky, did you rehearse it, the scenes?
Music? No, the settings and that? No, that was done on the spur of the moment.
It was?
They set up a scene. O'clock call to be in the dressing room and have makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And the movies, they don't just powder your nose and once in a while get the girl with the powder and tip it off. They put that makeup heavy, like you're a cowboy, you know. So, and here I am with a white hat, too.
As if you were the hero, right?
Well,
of the whole movie.
I thought she should make me take it off, but he didn't. We sit around, and then when the chow was called around noon, imagine sitting from about 6 to 7, or 7 till noon time, and then they ring the bell, chow call, and you go out there all made up, and you haven't done a thing.
Yeah.
You're waiting for scenes to go by and see whether you're in sequence. And that.
Yeah.
And we got a big kick out of it. But be it as it may, I'd do it again.
I did do it again. Yeah, you did. You'd sit around and wait most of the time, wouldn't you?
Yeah, hurry up and wait.
Hurry up and wait, just like the army. Did you have a script? Did you know what was happening?
Oh yeah,
I've got
a script. They gave you. There are certain parts that you didn't get through, which didn't involve you. Now, we were up at Bear Mountain, filming the show, And it was too far to go back to Hollywood, so they'd feed us out there, and we had off one day, and we started playing cards. And about the time that we did, when we got in a good card game or a dice game, somebody would holler, and they had the wrong script. They'd say, Pee Wee King and the band, we need you right now. And we'd hurry up and gobble up our food and then come into the tavern, and there they were shooting each other. And they said, what are you doing here? I said, the call girl gave us a call. We come down here to see what you wanted. And Mr. Knight would say, we don't need you. He said, go back where you were.
Yeah, there was a lot of loose motion, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it was a lack of communication sometimes, but actually it was good because it kept you in a mood that at least you wanted and having fun, you know. Mm-hmm.
I noticed that on your accordion you can see your name, Pee Wee King. Did you make sure?
Just Pee Wee.
Are you sure King's not on there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, maybe not, but I thought I saw your whole name on there. But
oh, it probably was on the...
On the accordion.
Yeah, but not on the front of it.
I don't remember, but I remember...
Probably on the side.
I could see your name.
Yeah.
Did you make sure that you you had your name?
Yes, there you go. I saw that camera and I was smiling to read the band.
And
singing.
And singing too, yeah. Because you know, you all back when you all back up smiling.
Backed up smiling. I was inside the
Bunkhouse. You're playing the accordion, and that's where I could see that Pee Wee King. I think it's Pee Wee King. Somewhere on the accordion.
Yeah.
Somewhere on the accordion. Yeah.
And Smiley Burnett was such a genius. He made up songs for certain scenes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that one he thought about to fool that girl that time, I'll never forget. Big heavy set girl, and she was after Smiley, and she was that. And he said, Pee Wee, he said, don't let that woman get next to me. He said, we have to act. You know that, don't you? He said, I'm not acting. But anyhow, that's how the Bunkhouse scene started. I forget what the song was we sang. It was something about...
I forget, too. I didn't write it down.
It was a pretty cute song that he wrote there.
Well, in fact, in one scene, I think maybe it's at the end, when she's coming toward him and he's on his horse and he sees her and he just turns his horse around and goes and runs in the opposite direction.
The horse with one eye.
All right.
The ring around his eye.
Didn't he write the script? For that, it seems to me he was the script writer for that movie.
Well, he writers did some scenes, yeah.
Because I thought I was trying to check the credits, and it seemed to me that he was credited.
He got credit for a lot of the music, but what's his name? The two brothers wrote "Gold Mine in the Sky,"
mm-hmm.
And you notice Gene always in his movies has used the top song in the country as a title for his picture, mm-hmm. and then it was built around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sings the title song early on in the movie when they...
When I see with the guitar, he's...
When the man is dying, and he's kind of singing that to him as he's dying, apparently.
Yeah.
Which is appropriate.
There was another scene there. Here I thought, getting right behind Autry, I didn't know he was going to be up on a log, and I saw... Gene's, his double, Joe Mr. Irgun, was sitting by the old man as he fell off his horse.
Right.
And I said, this is where it happens. So I got there behind that log and I was going to see where I could sit. So I told Milton, I says, Milt, I said, if there's some talking, I said, you do it over there. And you get over on the other side of the fellow that's the old man is dying. He said, why, you think they'd say something to me? I said, yeah, you get paid extra for that, you see. So he practices, well, yes, I will, I won't do it. And to say a word. He didn't ask him to say a word.
He didn't ask him to say a thing.
Yeah. And I was on the picture completely. Yeah. Cowboy Jack laid there instead of me.
So you're off the edges of the picture then. You're not really on the...
The white hat was too noticeable.
Too noticeable, yeah. Well, you mean you didn't always know whether or not you were going to have words to say in a scene?
No, not till rehearsal time. They rehearsed some of the stuff. They had to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a full time and that. But now, on this other picture that we made with Johnny Mac Brown, that was a lot easier.
Okay. Yeah, I want to ask you about that. When was the Johnny Mac Brown Claim of the West made? Do you know about
1945.
45, okay. Why was it easier?
Well, it was a typical Western, the kind they usually make in 15 days.
15 days?
Yeah, 15 days to make a Western. That's what the contract study is, not the stars, the actors and actresses, the cowboys and girls, the call girls and that, they contracted for 2 weeks' work. Mm-hmm. But they give you 15 days' pay.
How long did it take you to make Gold Mine in the Sky? Same?
No, it was a little bit. Gene fell off his horse and he bruised his knee. And
Gene Autry fell off his horse?
Well, it wasn't supposed to be a stunt, but he fell, he lost his balance just enough to where he hurt he skinned his knee.
Uh-huh.
So the next day they didn't shoot at all. And Gene went to the hospital downtown in Hollywood, and he came back 2 days later. So they shot around the scene that he was supposed to be. It was a fight scene, that's what it was. Yeah, he jumped off the horse and he was supposed to fall with this guy right down the hill. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to do that because they set him up and says, no, you wait till the stuntman does it. And he says, I'd rather try it myself. Because he can jump out of the stirrups in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Gene was a good horseman. He's a good fighter.
But this time he stumbled when he jumped off.
Yeah, he got his legs crossed and fell on his knee. And that was it.
But did that delay the completion of the film?
Well, they delayed it about 2-3 days. We went into the third week then.
Ah, I see. But
he doesn't worry because the union pays the guys anyhow if they're on call or anything else. So there we had a whole day off. All the cowboys in that. They told a story about Gene one time. They were shooting a picture right before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually hurt his elbows so bad that he didn't want to work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm going to the hospital. And he said, you stay here, and if I feel like it, I'll come back in 2 days or 3 days. And Mr. Knight says, I forgot the big man, but Harry Knight was our producer. And he said, why don't you just go ahead, Gene, and we'll shoot around other stuff. And I found out, Smiley says, now Gene didn't really hurt himself that bad. He said, I'll tell you right now what he did. He knew Christmas was coming. He made sure that they'd have the holiday off and then work a day before New Year's Eve so they get that extra money. And he said he gives them that extra money that they get in overtime.
So,
that's the kind of guy he is.
So he really...
They all loved to work together with Gene. It was just such... It was a joy. You could tell it when you're around the crew, you know, everybody was cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
Just like our violin fiddle player, Abner Sims. He fell off of his horse. It was a chase. Everybody got on. And we said, sure, we want to run. We want to ride, too, and Mr. Knight. He says, no, he said, I'd rather, he says, can we ride this one? A short chase is just about a half a mile or so. That's all we'd be on horseback. So Ab got put on the side, and he thought he was going to go straight. but all the horses turned left. And Dad fell off the horse this way, on the right side. And then he stopped and says, oh, wait a while. And Mr. Knight laughed. He says, now I told you you shouldn't get on that horse. Well, he said he didn't go where I asked him to go.
He followed the other one.
Made, well, yeah, he got a laugh out of the whole crowd.
But when then did they have to reshoot that scene?
Yeah, he shot it over. It had been a picture, of course, running after the horse.
But yeah.
He said, we can't use that. He said, now either you're going to be a musician or a stuntman. What are you going to do?
Or the comic. And the comic was Smiley Burnett, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you couldn't have two comics.
Well, the stuntman. See, the stuntman says, we can't shoot him unless he's a stuntman.
Oh, yeah. Did you ride a horse in that?
Yeah.
I forgot.
On the church. That's
in
the
chase
we
in
ran.
In a chase, right, yeah.
See, I rode next to Joe Uruguay, and I was in the picture.
Yeah.
You could see my back, my
right,
face, and everything.
That's right. And he was the stuntman.
Yeah.
He was the stuntman. You didn't have any problems with the horse, did you?
No.
Because you knew how to...
Well, I thought I did, but some of them chases... Now, they got one that they don't want nobody... to get hurt, and that's the running W. And they run, and the horses trip and fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they run so far, and that the front leg is tied to a thing, and you pull it, and he trips there, and that's where he falls. Mm-hmm. But if you're used to stunts, you know just exactly when it's going to happen, mm-hmm. and you brace yourself for it. You gotta be one hell of a rider to be able to do running W's.
And that's why they have to use stuntmen for those scenes.
Yeah.
Did any horses ever get hurt in those?
Well, now in our picture, there was only two horses that got hurt, but it was their own fault. I mean, the cowboys that were on them. This one place, they hit a rattlesnake nest. And the horses reared back and through the rider, and they went through the bushes and got skinned up.
The horses did?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You mean the rattlesnake scared the horses?
The rattlesnake scared them, and they just reared up and back and threw the cowboy off because he didn't expect any rattlesnakes, but they were up there. Boy, we saw them.
Yeah.
We saw them other things that...
Scorpions.
Oh. We used to watch them fight. Man, they'd fight. They'd fight to kill each other.
But you didn't have any problems with them. Nobody got snake bitten or...
Well, Frankie Marvin was a prankster. He's a Gene Autry steel guitar player.
Uh-huh.
And his right-hand man for a long, long time. But the cook, the big heavyset black fellow was cooking. And he says, come and get it. About the time we start coming there, and Frankie come running down there, and he had a rubber hose. And he says, my gosh, he says, do you know that snake is over there? Been around you all that time. The colored guy, he said, don't you do that all anymore. He said, I almost fell in that hot tub of water and got boiling there.
What kind of food would he fix for you all?
The best you can get, the best.
Like what?
Well, you get your pork chops, you get your ham, your beef. Mostly it was good steaks.
Steaks,
And homemade bread.
Homemade bread. And so nothing like sandwiches or anything like that?
No, they give you that for lunch.
Uh-huh.
They give you a good lunch, and then you can take what you want to if you want to go to the commissary, they got there right there, and then pick out what you want.
So part of the movie was filmed on location, and then part of it was filmed in the studio. But when you were on location, you ate out there.
Ate out there, they had benches.
Yeah, I ate in the open,
yeah.
Out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me about the John Mack Brown movie, The Flame of the West. You said it was easier to make than... Gold Mine in the Sky.
Yeah, because Flame of the West only runs about 59 or 58 minutes, I think. And Gene Autry's pictures ran an hour and a half, an hour 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy too because we got one of our songs in Johnny McBrown's, I know, Yeah, we did, the Johnny Mack Rollins picture. You'll See the Day, and Lynn Carter was a singer.
And this time you're...
She got a demo, we sent her a demo, one of them Schlack things we made, mm-hmm. and she liked it right away. And the producer said, they might as well let you do this song, because it is a pretty song. He says, it fits the day, fits the scene.
Uh-huh.
And it was lucky we had that in our songbook too, because it was copyrighted and we owned it.
Who wrote the song?
Mr. Frank and I. And the funny part about it is you get $100 for your song.
You mean that was in addition to your other pay? Your salary. You identify in this movie as Pee Wee King and the Golden West Cowboys, of course. And you have featured billing in the movie. And in fact, in the hotel scenes, you are, I guess the hotel scenes or tavern or whatever it's called, saloon. I guess it's a saloon. It's called
old time saloon.
Yeah.
Call girls live upstairs.
That's right.
The cowboys take off anytime.
But you see, they never called them that. You know, you see this woman,
Lynn Carter.
Yeah, and you see, what's she doing, and where are they going upstairs? But you never see them up there. No.
Not like the Dolly Parton picture with Burt Reynolds. Oh
that,
my God!
Best little whorehouse in Texas.
Yeah, that was fine.
Yeah. Let me see, it's, you have some dialogue in that film, too, you remember?
I don't remember.
I copied one, you said, yeah, I've got some humdingers. I've got some humdingers. I think that's the first line you say.
Yeah.
I think somebody says, can you play something or something? He says, yeah, I've got
some. He says, you got anything you can play for us?
Yeah.
And I said, we got some humdingers.
Yeah. But you see, you played yourself in that movie, didn't
yeah.
you? Because you identified as Pee Wee King and the Golden West Cowboys.
Yeah.
And you all played who you were. But everybody else was playing different roles.
Different
I mean, they were playing different people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was in your band then? Do you remember who was in that band?
Yeah, I got to remember that. All of them. Shorty on fiddle, Red on fiddle, Terry Tisci on guitar.
Was Red Stewart in then?
Yeah.
He was in that?
Yeah, one of the fiddle players. And, let's see. Sticks on drums, Gene Stewart on bass, Chuck on guitar, me and Gene Engel, the piano player. Eight boys.
And they were all your group?
Yeah, all my group.
All your group. The setting for this movie, Flame of the West, is in the old West.
That's
no
right.
cars. Mm-hmm. But now in the Gene Autry movie...
They had the car go by splash Smiley,
yeah.
And then he got mad, and the car turned off, and he didn't know that. He threw himself and he splashed the building.
Oh, really?
Now, he created that scene himself.
Yeah.
And got a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a contemporary Western. And the Johnny Mack Brown was an older Western.
Well, see, yeah, because Gene Autry, being the well-dressed cowboy, the singing cowboy, and doing the present-day hit song to begin with, Gold Mine in the Sky, they had to keep it for a little more modern.
More modern. Who was the lady yodeler in...
Carolina Cotton. Oh, that was Becky Barfield. That's the girl, Becky Barfield.
Okay.
John Barfield's niece.
Now, who is
Johnny he? Barfield is a big star in Alabama.
Barfield?
Yeah.
Johnny Barfield.
He was from, there's a town right on the border,
not Florence, or?
Now it's got two names, let's see.
Bustle Shoals?
No, it's up on the eastern part. Columbus is...
Fort Payne? Not Fort Payne.
No, that's too close to Nashville. This is further east. It's about the furthest eastern town in Alabama.
Up in the northeastern part of the state? two names. Cedartown is in Georgia.
Is it?
I think.
Cedartown.
But anyway, he was from Alabama, and she's his daughter?
No, his niece.
His niece?
Yeah.
And, well, how did she happen to get in this movie, do you know?
She was our little singer.
She was what?
She was our little singer.
Oh, she was with your group?
Yeah.
Oh, well, she could really yodel.
Oh, sure, that's why I hired her.
She was great.
She took the place of the girl that could really yodel, Texas Daisy.
Texas, yeah. But this woman was good. Whatever happened to her?
She died. Spade Cooley was looking for a girl singer, and I didn't want a girl singer to come up to Louisville with us. So I called Spade, and he told her to come out there. He paid her and everything. He took her time, and she started working for him as soon as she left me.
Where was that?
Hollywood, California.
Oh, so she went out there permanently later on?
And then she married one of the guitar players, and I think they were married about 5 or 6 years, then he died, and then she died.
What was her name again?
Becky Barfield.
Becky Barfield.
You were pictured the other
day. Yeah, you did, right.
With that
cellophane. I remember that. John McBrown looks a little old in this movie. And he wasn't that old. Though.
Well, because he wore a suit.
Yeah, he was a
doctor. I didn't like him. He doesn't look like Johnny McBrown in a suit. Because you're not used to seeing him that way.
Yeah.
But we were shocked too, because, you know, seeing him wear a suit most of the time.
Yeah. He was a doctor, though.
Doctor.
He was not a cowboy in this movie.
No, that's right.
But he knew how to handle a gun, though.
That's right.
As it turns out.
Yeah. And this is what happened to Durango Kid too. He was a doctor, and so was Rex Allen, a doctor in his movies. I don't know why they figured a cowboy should become a doctor, but I guess they ought to be doctors too.
Yeah. Did you get to know John McBrown pretty well?
We visited with him a couple of days, and then he took us next door to him for a barbecue with a movie star called Richard Bartlemus.
Bartlemus.
And had a good time there. Oh, we met a lot of stars out there that we recognized from faces, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I told the boys, and I said, we shouldn't talk to them one-on-one. We should just marvel at them and be happy with that.
Why?
Sometimes you say the wrong thing. You think you know them, and then you call them by the wrong name. I had that happen a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that you know them because you see them.
You see them on the screen. Yeah. Kind of. And because many of them had stage names.
Yeah,
also.
That's true.
But John McBrown didn't. This was, that his real name?
Yeah, that was his real name. Mm-hmm.
What kind of person was he? Do you remember anything about him personally?
Nothing too that I could say. He's a great guy, and you're a likable guy. And first of all, you're in awe all the time you're in his presence because he's such a big guy. I think he's about as big as John Wayne.
Yeah, he was a big man.
Yeah.
He was very tall, well built, because he was a football player in Alabama.
Yeah.
And because this movie, he looks a little old, but he wasn't that old, because he was born in 1904, and this movie was made when?
1945.
45, so he would have been 41 when he made that movie, but he looks somewhat older, and he's acting.
The drab clothes didn't help him either.
Yeah, I guess that was... But and he didn't seem to me to be too good an actor in this movie.
No,
he's kind of wooden, you know. Yeah. I was a little bit disappointed with him, because when I was growing up, we see him in the movies, and we loved him as a cowboy.
Yeah,
you know. He was funny.
And my favorite was Fred Thompson and Jack Hoxie. Fred Thompson had a horse named Silver King, and boy, I used to take my make-believe broomstick horse and ride him too when I was a kid.
When you were a kid, yeah. Yeah. What was their name?
Fred Thompson and Jack Hoxie.
And they were in the movies?
Yes. And they were stars.
But they were silent movie stars, weren't they?
No, they I guess
they had to be in the 20s. Yeah. I think they were. They could have been. But you would have seen them in the movie houses in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your TV shows that I looked at. The Pee Wee King show. This was in 1952. The one that I saw this past week.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Ertl's
92
beer. You had a ranch set that was made for you. You're all dressed in cowboy suits. Even the announcer, Bob Kay, was in a cowboy suit.
Yeah. And see, he played his part of the sheriff. Mm-hmm. So it was right that we dress him in cowboy.
Now, Red Stewart was in your band then.
Oh, yeah.
And Gene Stewart. Who's Gene Stewart?
That's Red's brother, one of his brothers.
Well,
there were five brothers, and they were all musicians.
All musicians.
Yeah. And their dad was a musician.
Well, whatever happened to Gene Stewart? He was quite good, I thought.
Well, he's still in town. In fact, he called me today and thanked me for sending him the copy of the picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he still performing?
Yeah, he's performing at this restaurant on River Road next to the Captain's Quarters called Chicken Inn.
Chicken Inn?
Yeah, they serve the best chicken in the world. Mm-hmm. And they're roasted.
Roasted, yeah.
Roasted chicken.
How often does he perform there?
Oh, about three nights a week. Mm-hmm. That's all he needs. He's head of the rug and utility department, you know, the rug department and accessories at Bacon's. Out on the south side, right?
At the big mall there?
Yeah.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Well, how old is he now? He must be
well,
60,
see. Is he? Yeah, he's about 60.
Because he was a very young fellow in this movie, I mean, in this TV show. Very young.
Yeah. He's a handsome guy now, the boy with silver hair.
Does he have? Yeah, I liked him. I thought he was good. I thought he was. And of course, Red Stewart, I knew. I mean, I knew who he was, but I didn't know who Gene was. Did you have a studio audience when these were being? It seemed that you did.
What they did, they have tourists once in a while. Oh, you mean for our Earl's 92
yeah,
show?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, we did have. We had about 50 people on Saturday nights.
And that would be in
Thursday nights.
And that is that Wave?
Yeah, WAVE, the big studio.
Where was that?
On Preston and Broadway.
Preston and Broadway.
Upstairs, the what is it, steel buildings, tubular turns or two turns or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was Neil Burris?
He was an extra boy that I hired because he shuffled. And he sang.
He did shuffle. Yeah, he could move around.
Good boy with it. He was, yeah. And he fit in our picture, fit in the group, and he traveled with my brother in a truck a lot of times because they'd go out. He wasn't married at that time. They'd go out together and take our songbooks and take records out there and everything.
Well, is he still living?
Oh yeah, he's. He's working for a suit coat company, a department store. If you mention it, I'll know it right away.
Burlington?
Not no, Burlington. Not. It's a high price suits.
Rhodes?
Rhodes. That's it.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Now the other.
He got out of the business. He lost his yodeler, and that's the one thing he could do real well. Right. And from then on, it was just downhill for him.
Oh, Now, the other TV show that I saw was Pee-wee King's Bandstand. It was kind of a showboat review. You had a showboat
scene. That's the one I objected to for a long time.
Why?
Well, first of all, we love to do any kind of music at all. We'll play it if we have to. But we're in Western clothes so long, then all at once they come in with a new sponsor, agent. Now Johnny Ertles says, Pee-wee, when I complained and went up to Mr. Johnny Ertles at the brewery, we sit down and had lunch and we...
Was that the owner?
Yeah.
The owner?
And I says, Mr. Ertles, I says, I don't know. I said, these guys might sell wine like crazy in St. Louis and that. They had the guy who sang Chattanooga Choo Choo, what is his name? Anyhow, they advertised, he was the band leader.
Oh, Tex Beneke? No, Tex Beneke?
Was it Tex Beneke?
No. I think he's...
Maybe it was.
He
had a big band around St. Louis and he was sponsored by a winery, a company, a big wine company.
Mm-hmm.
And they made their niche in St. Louis as a big advertising company. And so when Johnny, Mr. Ertle lost the advertising agency here, Ab Freeman, I'm trying to think of the Kopmeyer agency, and Mr. Earls waited around, and they finally got this guy from St. Louis to come here and take over the Earls account. Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty big account too. They had a lot of action in that. And at that time, we were the number one bottle count in the city. In fact, we had more bottle count than the other three breweries in town.
What does that mean, a bottle count?
Well, they take your caps and count them. They'll take you, as they cap the beer,
uh-huh.
They'll know how many they put out every 10,000, 50,000,
okay.
60,000. And the Fears and Fall City, there was one more year. We outsold all three of them.
Yeah.
So that made Earl's 92 the choice beer of the city.
Of the city, yeah.
So when I told Mr. Earl's that they want us to go on a showboat and dress up like showboat people do, and wear sailor caps and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mr. Earls, that ain't gonna go. I says, the people are used to seeing us. Now, for a one-time shot, it's all right to portray somebody else like you're acting for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were doing, just play acting. Mm-hmm. Mr. Burt Blackwell says, for God's sakes, can't you guys play act one time? He said, you got a new sponsor, you might as well tie into it and do the best you can. He gave us a pep talk and everything else. So finally you saw the movie, and that was our version of what a showboat looks
yeah.
like.
Well, but now, you had the same sponsor though, didn't you? They were both Earls.
They were Earls all the time.
Yeah.
But the agency, the advertising agency, was a different agency.
Oh, I see. It was the agency that was different, but the sponsor was the
yeah.
same.
Yeah.
And they wanted you to... Well, how many times did you do that showboat thing?
Well, they signed a 13-week contract, and I was glad it was over at 13 weeks.
So you all did 13 installments
yeah.
of the showboat thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that y'all played mainly pop music.
That's right.
You didn't play much country
well,
and western.
That's how versatile the band was. We played
yeah.
a lot of dances, and we were voted number one by the band, mm. the dance hall operators, mm. ballroom operators.
But you all did a lot of novelty songs, Hembone,
oh,
and,
yeah.
and
we had a
I'm sorry now.
A group of people that just gelled together.
Mm-hmm.
We had a boy and a girl duet. They could sing ballads and love songs.
Mm-hmm.
We had a trio. We called the Bardstown Buckle Busters. and we had two comics, Spike and Spud.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Gene Stewart, the good-looking singer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Red Stewart, one of the best singers.
Mm-hmm.
And we had trios that could double, go from any instrument they want. They could lay it down and just join the trio with the popular song of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Four Aces or the Four Lads, we could imitate it.
But at the same time you were doing this on television, this Showboat Review, you were playing other engagements as the Golden West Cowboys,
yes,
weren't you?
We dressed Western.
You say you dressed Western.
This
so.
Was just a Thursday night affair.
Yeah, right, okay. Who was Cindy Hayes?
She was a local girl singer that sang like Pei Lee, and she was secretary of the Musicians Union.
Ah.
So we got to know her real well, and she sang like a bird.
Yeah.
She was a lot of fun.
But
she kept, we all grew up in the same era, and we knew. We call her the Peggy Lee of Louisville.
She was blonde and kind of looked
yeah.
And this particular show, you had a guest from Birmingham named Sammy Salvo.
Sammy Salvo.
Yeah, I don't think I ever heard of him.
He had the number one record that year, and it was just a fly-by-night thing. It happened that we happened to be playing Birmingham, and he come by and he introduced himself, and he says, how about me coming up to do your show? I said, sure, why not? He said, come on up. Yeah, sir. He said, I won't charge you nothing. I says, no, I will pay your expenses. I got an expense account. So he came up and we learned to like him. He's a nice guy. So I took him to Chicago with us to play the show up there.
Now, was this to promote his song?
Promote his record.
His record. He sang Julie Doesn't Love Me Anymore. Was that the one that was popular?
That's the one that made him popular in Birmingham.
Oh, in Birmingham,
yeah. It wasn't nation.
Wasn't known. Yeah. And he never broke into a...
Well, he was on RCA Victor Records too, see.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
But he never became a really...
No.
A really big star, you know.
Never did.
Anything else I wanted to ask her. Red Stewart, his brother Gene was so thin. And on the, I don't know if he's thin now, but he on this in these two TV tapes.
That's probably when he was sick.
Really, he was very thin.
Yeah, he had a. In fact, he's going in now. He called me today. And he's going to be examined for a disability. Get Social Security disability.
Gene?
Yeah, he got lung problem, and he never smoked.
Really? No. But now, Red's always had a kind of a weight problem, hasn't he?
No, it wasn't a problem. He just loved to eat, and he stayed that way. He hit that about 160, I think. And he kept on at that weight, 162, 161,
mm-hmm.
158, 165. He'd get up there, but he's healthy.
He is healthy. Oh, he seemed to me to be a little bit pudgy, you know, in every in the face, every picture I've seen with him in it.
Yeah.
He seems to be.
Oh, I had a run-in right on the first show. I knew I wasn't going to like that guy anyhow.
Which guy was that?
From St. Louis.
Oh,
the agency,
RP.
Yeah. They showed a film. In those days we had black and white, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed a film of the guy dragging the six-pack of Earl's 92 in his boat.
Uh-huh.
And keep your Earl's 92 nice and cool, so you always ask for a cool Earl's 92. And you don't have to measure, the pleasure's always there. And the very first show we did, that's the commercial they were running. So I voiced my opinion. I says, you know, I said, I hate to tell you this, but our people who drink Earl's 92 work at standard manufacturing. They make toilets and tubs and everything, sinks, or else at the Ford Motor Plant, or else at the factory. And I said, they haven't got time to have a motorboat and drag that six-pack behind them. They come home, they take that dirty shirt off, and they got their undershirt on. It says, hey, Ma, get me a Earl's out of the icebox. He says, well, you may have something there, but he says, I am the advertising agency. And I says, I know you are, and you can keep it. And he says, you don't like it, do you? I said, no, I don't like that particular commercial. I said, it doesn't, it's not the image that we have. Yeah. We've built up all these years for 92. We've been with them a long time. And now you come in with this boat thing. So I called Earl's, Johnny Earl's, the next morning. I said, Mr. Johnny Earl, I'm coming in. He said, you don't have to come in, son. He said, I know what you're saying. And I said, did you see the show last night? Yeah, he says, unless you boys played on a boat before, he says, you couldn't tell it. And I said, no, I said, the boys didn't feel comfortable either, but 13 weeks, I'm sure it'll be. So the next week, the PR man come in. He said, you know something? He said, you guys used to write the jingles for them, didn't you? I said, not all of them. The agency bought some in. The Chirp song isn't ours. It belongs to Earl's 92. They copyrighted it, their theme song.
What was the name of it?
Cheer up with Earl's 92 whenever you are dry and thirsty. Anyhow, he says, you guys might be good songwriters, but I don't think you should write jingles. And right after that, Dottie West had the big Coca-Cola song. Mm-hmm. So this guy, it seemed like I wasn't picking on him and he wasn't picking on me, but we expressed ourselves and it didn't hit right.
Yeah. He wouldn't come over every week from St. Louis, would he?
Every
week?
Brought the commercials in with him, everything.
Already made, and then they just put them all on the air.
And he was here to see the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a very popular show, wasn't it? I mean.
Yeah.
How long were you on Wave for all your TV shows?
From 1940, well, I was the first picture when I took my hat off and says, welcome to WABE, the first television station in the state of Kentucky.
You were the first show?
The first show. Yeah.
You were, what?
We did a piped in show to the armory for the buyers. There was about 30 people buyers, an advertising agency and potential buyers. Like the first sponsor we had was Mr. French, worked for Peasley Galbert, because the Peasley Galbert was that odd name furniture store there. He lived right across the street from me. He says, I'll pick it up. I'll take 6 months of it. Mm-hmm. Then the next one was Taylor's.
Mm-hmm. Taylor's Drugstore?
Yeah, they only had 11 stores at that. Mm-hmm. And now look what they got.
They've got a lot now.
Yeah.
Yours was the first show to be on Wave, or to be on television in Kentucky?
In the state of Kentucky.
What was it called then?
Pee Wee King Show.
But and your sponsor was who?
Earl. No, not Earl. It was, I can't think of that. It's not a furniture store. It's a manufacturing company. But anyhow, right after that, then we got Earl's Brewery Company. And the second show was the St. X Trinity game, football game. They televised high school football Thanksgiving Day.
Really?
Mm-hmm. See, we were on in the afternoon from 5:30 to, 6:15 to 6:45. And then they took the, the cameras out to the football game.
There wasn't continuous broadcasting all day long?
No, it was. But they wanted to see what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they had those little sets, you know, only about 18 screens, I think.
What year would this have been?
It was Thanksgiving weekend of 1948.
48?
Yeah.
That's early.
Yeah.
But for television.
See, we came here in October 47, and then we played the 48 is when we got to television.
You came here from Nashville?
Nashville.
You moved back here from Nashville. Let's go to down some of these years and fill in some of them for a few minutes.
What have you got now?
We're down to 1960.
Okay.
In 1960, let me see.
I've got the notes here.
Okay. Let's do 60 for it. We haven't done 60. You got Lucky Merla?
Moeller.
Moeller. Who was Lucky Moeller?
He was a booking agency manager. He booked Minnie Pearl and the Pee Wee King shows at Fair Dates and auditoriums, and he was in Nashville. He was Nashville based.
Uh huh. And
promoter.
And did you work with him some?
He put the package together of Minnie Pearl, the Collins sisters, and Pee Wee King and the Golden West Cowboys, and took us across the country.
And you all played fairs, parks, festivals, and all that. You
worked.
Okay. And then in 61, you went to Las Vegas.
Yeah. But see, besides Lucky Moeller, I had made contacts with booking agents like in Omaha, Don Romeo, and in Kansas City, Hap Peebles.
Mm-hmm.
And up east, Mr. Ward Beam at New York State, and Cook and Rose in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept in touch with them all the time. When I had Lucky Moeller got one of our big days up the Fair Days somewhere up around in Allentown or a park date up there, then I would take and contact these other guys and see if they could get us firemen's picnics on, say, like on a Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. But I kept in touch with all the guys like that.
Did you pay these booking agents a fee or a percentage?
15%.
15%. Well, now, but only for those that he booked you
that
for.
He booked for.
So in that you booked for yourself, he got no cut.
Then I have to give that guy his, but I have a regular salary coming, and he doesn't put the 15% on. I don't have to pay him that,
mm-hmm.
because he just knows what he does. Mm-hmm. I work for him.
Yeah. How'd you get to Las Vegas? What was the occasion there?
Colonel Parker booked us in there.
Colonel Parker booked you in Las Vegas.
They had a week of some kind of a doing there, and they wanted a Western band. And Colonel Parker suggested, he said, Pee Wee King's got one of the best bands for this type of a room. He says, we better get him in here. Well, see, he hadn't seen the band. At that time,
this was the first time.
It was the same. It wasn't the same band when it went out to the Golden West Cowboys.
Huh.
It was the other, the number two band.
It was a different band.
Different band completely.
You were in the Golden Nugget?
Yeah, Golden Nugget. That's one of the places they have Western music.
Mm-hmm.
And we were booked in there, I guess, for 3 weeks.
Three weeks.
And, Then we went on tour. Let's see, from there we went to Idaho, and Boise, Idaho, Potlatch, Idaho, North Platte, Nebraska, and in Omaha we worked for Don Romeo. And in Iowa we worked for Jack Lindahl out of Chicago. We worked Dubuque. Mm-hmm. And also Rockford, Illinois, then we came home.
Mm-hmm. That was...
That was about a month we were gone.
Uh-huh. And all of this was booked by Colonel Parker?
No.
No?
They're different ones. Colonel got us into the Golden Nugget.
Okay. And you and as you came back home, you played different dates? Uh-huh. Did you do that very often? You'd say, okay, we're going to be in Las Vegas, and how'd you get out there, on your bus?
Yeah, we at that time, we had two station wagons.
Two station wagons. And so we got to make it back home, so we might as well play some dates on the way home.
That's right.
Is that what you would do frequently?
Not come home straight deadhead. That's too rough to do.
Yeah.
Because that's a heck of a
long drive. It's a long drive, yeah.
Well, we used to do them, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about playing in Las Vegas at the Golden Nugget. What kind
of, I called,
was that your first time?
Yeah, that was the only time.
Only time?
I called it a salt mine.
A salt mine?
Yeah.
What?
Well, when you got through with your set, you climbed up the stairs to your dressing room. And when you worked the night shift, like we did, till 2 o'clock in the morning, from 8 o'clock to the morning, 2 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night to 2 in the morning, boy, those hours got long. Mm-hmm. And I told Mr. Green, no, it wasn't Green, it was the manager, he come up to me and he said, you don't seem to be enjoying yourself. I said, I'm not. I said, I'm not used to this. And he said, well, I'll be here 2 weeks, you better like it. I said, well, we're really used to it. I said, it makes us a little different than what we're used to. So after the 2 weeks are over, I got my pay and everything else, and he bought me a drink, and we sit there and talk. He says, I'll say one thing. You were a hard-working group. He said, the shows were well-liked by everybody, well-received, but he said, the attitude that you had, he said, it wasn't you. He said, I expected you to be bubbly all the time. And I said, well, I said, I wasn't, and you know, I'm sorry. Yeah. I said, he said, well, what would you rather do? Do you one-nighters like you always do? I said, that wasn't bad. And we used to play a different audience every night.
Right.
And I said, here, along about midnight, when they start dwindling down at 2 o'clock in the morning, there ain't 25 or 30 people out there. And I said, you don't feel like putting on a big show for them. So he said, well, he says, I doubt then that you want to come back here. I said, no, he says, I imagine, but I said, we'll see how it all turns out. So I never called him back or nothing.
Yeah, so you never going back out there. Yeah. It was the hours, it was the audience, or what?
No, it's not the type of an audience. See, when you play a dance, you got motion. When you play a date in the theater, you got response. But you work a gambling joint, you got gamblers. They don't give a damn who's up there.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a big room, and the Golden Nugget didn't have a big room.
Well, they weren't gambling while you were playing, were they?
Sure.
Oh, that must have been awful.
That's right.
I mean, I can't imagine.
That's right.
And they weren't paying much attention, were they?
Nope. Well, we called their attention to it. I said, well, the show's going to go on in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they come out to start with, and as the 45 minutes just dragged on for all of us.
How long were your sets?
45
minutes.
45 on, 15 off.
45 on. And how many sets would you do a night?
Well, from 8 o'clock to...
So whatever you could get in.
Till 2.
Like 4 or 5?
It's 4 to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 7 sets.
7 sets, my gosh. And the audience, they weren't sitting there in
no,
a concert fashion.
They were going to different tables, gamble, shooting dice, pulling the
slot machines. That must be the worst. I cannot imagine if I were a musician.
It isn't that way no more.
It's not?
No.
What?
The guy learned is you both start bringing names in there that were familiar to the people that were used to going to Golden Nugget. Mm-hmm. Or there was another one called the Showboat up the street from us, and they had the Hollywood entertainers there. Mostly from Hollywood to Vegas isn't far.
Yeah.
And the boys that they get are on television every day. Mm-hmm. in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And they're well known in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So on Monday night when we had off, we'd go see them and they'd put us on stage with them.
Yeah.
To advertise that we're at the Golden Nugget.
Yeah, yeah. But now the Golden Nugget now has
an
auditorium.
Yeah, big auditorium.
So, and no gambling in it.
No.
I mean,
it's all on the outside.
Yeah. So if you played a date there now, you wouldn't have to be competing with the roulette wheels and
right.
slot machines.
That's
but
right.
you were doing that when you were playing
yeah.
earlier.
It wasn't so hot then.
Golly, I can't.
Well,
it was noisy.
But we got good money in.
Yeah, yeah. But still, that was kind of disrespectful, it seems to me, when you're performing.
They operated that way.
I know.
And is it Keno, another game that they play? Yeah, I think Keno. Mm-hmm.
Keno.
Keno games went right on. They didn't care about the music or who they had entertaining.
Yeah. And did you played instrumental music and you had soloists
well,
too?
We had
the whole thing.
See, that was the so.
Well, would you have a little platform that you'd play on?
Oh, a stage, pretty nice stage.
Uh-huh.
You put about five musicians, six musicians on. The drummer and all that stuff.
But you in one end of the...
One end of the building.
Of the gambling area.
Yeah. Well, the gambling was all around, like a semicircle, like a stadium.
Uh-huh.
And your band was set in there in the corner like this, right in front of all of it.
Uh-huh.
But all the slot machines and all the gambling games, those dice tables were all here.
Mm-hmm.
And here was this little alcove with about, I'd say 150 chairs and that.
Would people stop and listen, or were they just going?
Oh, yeah,
some of them would.
Yeah.
But they didn't have chairs that they could come down and sit in. That they were
they were permanent chairs.
They were gambling or
yeah.
while they were listening.
Yeah.
So you were kind of like background music, weren't you?
Just about.
That's awful. I don't blame you. I wouldn't have gone back either. But I guess it paid pretty well.
Oh yeah, they had to pay you.
Yeah.
So, and Homer and Jethro were there a month before we were, and they said, we learned something, and we wanted to pass it on to you. He says, what you do is try to get a little money in advance every night, or every second night.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that way they'll think you're spending it, and send it home.
So
we did that.
Yeah,
yeah, I do. I said, all the boys have got to get a little money ahead, so I said, we'd like to draw a couple $100 and that. So I wrote out a debit and gave it to pass the window, and he'd give us the cash, and then we'd go around and make people spend it at the tables.
So, and they liked that idea.
Of course.
They thought they were getting their money back.
Yeah.
But they weren't paying you any more than they had agreed to, though.
No.
But they just, it made them feel good, I guess, about getting it back. Okay. Yeah, well, that's interesting, though. Did you meet any other stars out there?
No, only the California guys that we knew.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, you had the big names in the other clubs that were there.
And you,
the ink spots, we went to see the ink spots. Mm-hmm. From that.
Okay.
62, the that, highlight?
Yeah, what was the highlight of 62?
Evansville Telethon.
What was that, with Bob Hope?
Yeah.
Was that the arthritis telethon?
Yeah.
Well, now tell me how you got on that.
The people from Evansville radio station and television station, they wanted us to come down. They booked us in for it. And we got paid a small salary, and the rest of it we donated to the telethon.
Uh-huh. And Bob Hope was the headliner?
Was the headliner.
And the MC? And
the officers' club, we went out. Air Force Base, Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska, and Kansas.
You were playing the NCO clubs then?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then we got the dinner club at the Flame up in Minneapolis.
What's that?
For 1 week. That's a Western nightclub, like a dinner club, like across the river. It was a dinner playhouse, the playhouse, dinner club.
Oh, you mean at the Derby Dinner Theater?
Derby, yeah. It's about that kind of a
oh, I see.
Place.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same thing. They used a lot of local bands and name bands on record.
Mm-hmm. Now, you got here Patsy Cline. Did you?
Stoughton Fair. Yeah, she was booked in this. Lucky Motor booked it.
Where was this?
At Stoughton, Wisconsin.
Stoughton, Wisconsin.
We had to go and send a car out to the airport to pick her up at Madison, and then she came to the Stoughton Fair and worked there with us up there.
But it, was this the only time you ever worked with Patsy Cline?
The only time we worked.
Well, what do you remember about Patsy Cline?
Well, I would say she was everything they said she is as far as an entertainer and as far as a lady she is. And I didn't get to see much of her because when she finished her show, she went back to the dressing room and that. But then, I said, did we go anywhere after that? Oh yeah, we had to go to Indianapolis with Charlie Weaver.
To the state fairgrounds?
So we didn't see.
You didn't see much of Patsy Cline.
And she went back on the airplane to Nashville.
Uh-huh.
Or where she was going, she didn't say.
What? When was she killed? What year did she die?
Oh, I forget.
It was late. It was several years later, I know, but I forgot when.
Not too much later.
Not too much later. But she was she's legendary now, of course. Yeah. I guess because she got killed in such a tragic way. But did you like her music? Did you like her way of singing?
Oh, yeah. She's a great singer. My God, she was the best country singer then at that time.
Yeah. I guess she was one of the biggest girl star, I guess, wasn't she?
At that time.
What was her big numbers then?
Walking After Midnight and... the one she won the Arthur Godfrey show with, what the heck was that? That's... My God, I can't think of it.
I know which one you're talking
in
about.
In 63, we did our own movie, and we filmed at Kent Lane Studios and did the outdoor shots of Renfrew Valley.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't a great success, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
We formed Teleking Corporation. We couldn't give it away.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the Teleking Corporation? That was the corporation.
Teleking.
That was for the making of the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it took us until 1967 to get all the copyrights cleared and everything else. We shot it in 63 and filmed and come out with it in 67.
And when it came out, it didn't do too well. Where did it play? Where did the movie play?
We had distributors in Florida, we had distributors in New Orleans, we had a distributor in Cincinnati, Ohio, we had one in Cleveland, we had one in Milwaukee, we had one in Chicago, we had about 10 guys that were, they volunteered to take a movie on a, not on a percentage basis, we had to, let's see what happened.
It didn't go over.
Didn't go over.
Why don't you think it went over?
We weren't known at that time for in pictures. We didn't make pictures at that time.
Yeah.
And the title of the picture, we called it Country Western Hoedown.
Yeah.
So, did I show you one of the brochures? I think I did.
I think you did. You don't have a copy of that, do you?
Yeah.
Of the movie?
No, I don't. That I don't have.
Hmm. I'd like to see that.
And then right after that, we went to filming commercial. No, to making Stardy Records and an album material. And we started going to the fair, board meetings, like go to Michigan, we go to Detroit. They had a banquet for the fair board that was there, all the fair boards from Michigan. So we did a 6:30 show and 9:30 dance.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan was one of our biggest dates for fairs and parks and everything.
Well, why do you think you were so popular in Michigan?
I don't know, for some reason or other, Michigan's just a darn good Pennsylvania and Michigan and Iowa, Nebraska, those were fairly, and of course Indiana was always good.
But what about Kentucky?
Well, there's nothing, I couldn't even get on anything around here. There's little fairs in the territory, they use local bands.
Local band?
Yeah.
What about the state fair here in Kentucky?
I played the state fair a couple of times.
Did you enjoy, was it a good
oh, yeah.
Good show?
Yeah, because we were from here and they come up. And then 65, what do we have?
Mobile.
Sports show. We played a real sports show down in, was it Mobile? Yeah.
You got Mobile, Bill King Sports Show.
Yeah. And Paul Harney was the guest. And then,
he was the MC.
The other booker up in Connecticut was Jim Hinkle.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a singer and a former entertainer. And he learned he can't make it with that, so he started booking acts, and he paid good, and we played Springfield, Massachusetts, and Hershey Park, Norwalk, Connecticut, Albany, New York, Bridgeport, Connecticut, Binghamton, New York, Rochester, New York.
Mm-hmm. What's this Wild Pony Roundup at Chincoteague?
That is the biggest thing they got in Chincoteague.
What were you doing there?
Well, they booked an ABC. One of the guys from ABC called when we were in Cleveland on television.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what kind of an entertainment unit has Pee Wee King got? And the manager of television in Cleveland said, why? What do you need him for? He says, we got a date to go and set our equipment here and watch the most freakish thing I ever heard of. A bunch of wild horses live on an island, and then they make them swim once a year to come in, and they have auctions.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, I'll approach Pee Wee on it. So I called the guy, and sure enough, he took it. I told him it was three shows a day, and we saw the horses coming in, and they have the auctions in between. So we do a half hour show, and then the guy would sell horses for about 2 hours or 3 hours. It worked out pretty good.
And they taped it for television?
Yeah.
Was it live?
Yes, we were live, and then they covered it. It wasn't a constant, a whole day taping, no.
Uh-huh.
It was just about 2 hours out of the whole day.
When would you do these concerts? Was there a park there or a?
No, it was a platform.
Uh-huh.
With the auctioneer, and he played those wild horses in front of you.
Oh, I see.
And the people would just stay, walk around, and look at the ponies and buy the kids each a pony or something like that. But they were wild.
Yeah, I've heard of the wild ponies at Chicopee. Yeah. You didn't buy one, did you?
No, I wanted to.
You did?
I said, no, I ain't gonna bring that home. I got a healthy family now.
Yeah, I guess you have to break them first, wouldn't you, before you could ride them, because they weren't broken, were they?
No. Well, they were wild. They grew up there on that island. Yeah. Every year, they have their colts and they bring them in.
And so ABC telecast live from the auction?
From the grounds, right?
From
there,
the ground.
Cinco de Tigre. I couldn't find it on a map to begin with. I had to find it.
So it's a little bitty place.
Little bitty town, right out of Washington.
Yeah, it's a town, is it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you had an audience of people who were there?
We had thousands of people. Mm-hmm. They figured the attendance was about 35,000 people coming to town.
Because they weren't all interested in buying the ponies,
but they wanted to see what was going on.
To see the ponies.
And after you seen them come, they'd drive the herds in a few at a time. Instead of going and getting them all.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And what's this?
Kuka Records. We went to make an album, a souvenir album, to plug the picture and sell at the movie where the picture was playing, Hoedown, Country Western Hoedown.
For your movie.
Our company, uh-huh. Corporation. And the funny part about it was, the album sold better than the movie.
It did.
We called it Petticoat Junction, see.
You call the album Petticoat Junction?
No, that was the opening tune on it.
So I see, yeah.
It was the opening of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably was
sold. What was the album called?
Country Western Hoedown.
It was called the same as the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's got us through 1965. Anything else happened in 65 that we ought to...
You 66. Nothing can happen, no more after 65. Incidentally, I'm playing Sunset Park this August that I've worked in 1965.
Really?
And the same man owns it the son is now running it. The old man that owns it, Mr. Waltman, had died. Now his son, Waltman Jr., is there.
That's in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. We're taking the big package over there. A Hall of Fame package featuring Ralph Emery as the master of ceremonies and Bill Monroe and his group and Jimmy Dickens and his group, Kitty Wells and her group, Pee Wee King and his group.
Now, what would you carry with you?
I used a band that Hank Williams Sr. left behind called the Drifting Cowboys.
Oh, you'll be using...
They back up Red and I.
So you and Red will be going with the Drifting Cowboys.
Yeah.
Where are they based?
They're based in Nashville.
In Nashville.
Yeah.
And you'll just meet them up there.
Yeah, they've got their own bus and everything.
And you rehearse and then
They know our stuff already. We worked together so many times. They got Hank Williams' daughter, illegitimate daughter,
mm-hmm.
Jet. And she's got a book out, and you ought to read it.
Right, yeah.
You ought to read it. It's one of them people back things that you're talking about, that Travis made.
Right. And so you'll be performing up there again.
Yeah, two shows.
Two shows, okay. When's that going to be? August?
August 16th, I think. August something.
What kind of park is this?
That's a great big park.
Yeah,
it's called Sunset Park.
An entertainment complex, and they have a concert hall there.
They have.
Is it outdoors?
It's outdoors. It's, it'll be like an old time fair date,
mm-hmm.
little county fair.
Mm-hmm. Where is West Grove, Pennsylvania?
It's right out of.
It just says West Grove. I just wondered where it was.
I know it's up there in the
Is it near Philadelphia or Pittsburgh?
It's near Philadelphia.
Oh, that's way on over in the state. Yeah.
I still want to see you perform sometime, so I thought maybe I could drive up and see you at this date, but that's going to be a little far to drive.
Yeah, we are. I'm worried about it, too.
Why?
I don't have to drive that far anymore.
Well, see, you can fly. I can't fly. I have to drive wherever I go.
Buckley Ranch, we work, too.
Yeah.
Glassy, I told you that story.
Oh, yeah, you did. Pee-wee, let's stop here and take up next time in 1966. And
that was the end of 66.
No.
May and June, we played Harmon Air Force Base in Newfoundland.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But let's pick up there, and I've got to meet somebody for a meeting that I have coming up, and we've been going at it for a couple of hours, so I think that's probably... you haven't fixed a dateline for the 70s yet, have you? We're down to 70.
I've got it.
You got one over there?
I started at 70.
Okay.
I'll just show you a little notice.
You can give me you have two copies or just one?
Just one.
One copy?
I'll give it to you.
Okay. Take this off.
I got it all made out to 1980.
Oh, great.
The 70s all done.
Great. Okay. Yeah, this is helpful for jogging your memory, I think.
Yep. I did some pencil, some...
Oh, that's okay. I can read it. I can read it all right. Put this out here.
Is that 70? Is that what it said, 1970?
Uh-huh. 70 through 80. 70 through 80.
See, now, here's the stuff I have. There's a letter from Winfield Gunn, the former governor of Tennessee. This is the president of our former president, Mr. Kramer, and me and I.
Mm-hmm.
She is not a president, that's who he and I.
Mm-hmm.
I don't drink very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is Newman King Day in Madison, Kentucky, October 24, 1971. This is Newman King Day in New York, somewhere. This is in Nashville.
Country Western. No, don't tear it out, Pee Wee. Well, you shouldn't get that.
I have several.
Well, I won't. Just give me a whole one then, because I'd like to keep it.
Take this one.
Okay, I can take that. Oh yeah, that'd be great. Okay, good. And this is in the 70s, too. In the 70s. And we're going to be talking about this next time. 70s. Okay, great. All right, let me put this in with my... Yeah.
Here are the executives of the country music business in Nashville. This is the president of Opryland.
Oh.
And all in it. The whole complex.
Uh-huh.
Bud Winter.
Uh-huh.
This is the biggest record distributor in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
this is Acre Close, this is Wesley Rose, he passed away recently. That's me. Mm-hmm. This is the head of Country Music Foundation Museum and Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. When was this made?
This was about 72.
Oh, that long ago. It's a little more recent than that. 85. Yeah, it looks more recent, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, but that, they're still there.
Yeah.
They were there when I first started.
Let me put this here.